revisions out this week for the downtown riverfront. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, dueling plans for the future of the St. John's Riverfront. What's going on with all of this? Give us a call now. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, why gun safety advocates will wear orange this weekend on the First Coast. First, though, here's your COVID update for Thursday. The state says COVID cases increased overnight by 1,234 with 55 new deaths. The death toll in the state now stands at 36,924. Vaccinations keep going up, and that is driving the case count and the death count down. But please, as we say every day on this program, go get your vaccination if you haven't done it yet. Let's get all the way to herd immunity. Well, the Jacksonville Jaguars will present their updated development plans for downtown later this morning. At the same time, local developer Steve Atkins earlier this week unveiled a $1 billion plan for what he's calling Riverfront Jacksonville. This is a planned mega development for the North Bank. How will these two visions interact? David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union has been covering all of this, and he's on the line now. Hey, David.
Hey, Melissa. Good morning.
So good to have you. Always good to have you on the show. And as we talk about developing the riverfront, we want your calls, everyone. 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, David, later this morning, Jaguars owner Shad Khan, team president Mark Lamping, and head coach Urban Meyer will give a news conference, and we'll all learn details on what they want to do to redevelop the downtown waterfront shipyards parcel and possibly also improve TIAA Bank Field. What can we expect from this big announcement?
Well, we know that the Jaguars have been in talks now for many months about a plan that Shad Khan has to bring a Four Seasons hotel and residence to the riverfront. So that obviously is something that we might expect to hear more about. That's on the site that actually is riverfront land. It's next to, but not on, Metropolitan Park and near the sports complex. So that could be part of it. And then we do know that in March, head coach Urban Meyer talked about how the team was in some serious discussions about a new training facility. It was state-of-the-art, something that would be brought up to standards that some other NFL teams have for their team facilities. So you know, that's something that's been out there as well. So perhaps we'll learn more about developments in that regard.
Okay.
So both would be big projects.
Yeah. Let's begin with the Four Seasons. A Four Seasons on the North Bank. That has attracted a lot of interest. At the same time, there's been some skepticism about whether a really high-end hotel like a Four Seasons could make it in that part of the city. Shad Khan seems to think it can.
Yeah, he's been on it for several years now. Now, he does own a Four Seasons hotel in Canada, I believe in Toronto. So even though his fortune was made in the automobile parts industry, he's got some experience running hotels and that particular aspect of the hospitality industry. You know, you're right. I mean, it's an area of the city in downtown that's kind of a little bit isolated right now. It's out there. You know, obviously, we say over and over again that the river is the heartbeat of the city. It does have great views of the river from that location. But it's a high-end hotel. It's a hotel that puts a lot of prestige behind its name. So that is still the plan, though, is to have a Four Seasons hotel is what Khan has been pushing now for several years, really, and has been talking about, in talks with the Downtown Investment Authority about any kind of an economic development deal that would make that possible.
At the same time, on the North Bank, the MOSH, the Museum of Science and History, they're planning to put a new facility on that side of the river. And as we talk with David Bauerlein of the Times Union, let us know what you'd like to see done to activate the riverfront downtown. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Okay, David, so as we await this big announcement from the Jaguars, at the same time, a developer named Steve Atkins, who's been working to restore the Barnett Bank Building and another group of historic buildings downtown called the Laura Street Trio, he unveiled a new concept this week called Riverfront Jacksonville. He wants to build 10 new buildings on the North Bank, all the way from the site of the former Jacksonville Landing to the site of the old county courthouse. And so this is something he's doing on his own, although he has met with the Downtown Investment Authority. Tell us about this proposal.
Well, it's not as far along as the talks have been between Shad Khan and the city over what he wants to do on the shipyards. They're not directly in conflict, obviously, because they're two different sections of the riverfront. If you put them together, it would be a really impressive run of buildings from basically what used to be the landing site, miles down the riverfront, all the way to just before Metropolitan Park. His proposal is one that's unsolicited, so the first decision would be whether the DIA would want to take the land that he's identified and do a big master plan developer on it. But it's got a real intriguing mix of office, residential, condominium. He would propose to build an exhibition hall that would go with the Hyatt's convention-oriented hotel to expand on that type of a business that the city could attract. It's just the whole thing about a city of renderings. It's a very impressive set of renderings.
Yes, very impressive renderings.
The ask from the city would be over $500 million. So while there's not a competition in the sense that they're what Shad Khan wants to do and what Steve Atkins might want to do are, rivals for the same piece of the riverfront, they're different land areas. There is a limit to what the city is going to spend downtown. So that could be where the real contest is in terms of who goes first, who would get the, who would be able to secure the public sector funding.
Right, who would get the money.
These projects. And at this point, Khan is clearly ahead
Of
that in terms of the talks.
Way ahead. What Atkins wants to do, one of the things he wants to do is really intriguing, build underground parking garages that would have water storage capability from flooding and storm runoff. He also made the comment, and I'm paraphrasing David, but saying, it's time to get going, that for decades, this city has released rendering after rendering after. We've seen so many renderings, you and I and others that cover these things over the decades. I have a whole collection of renderings in my office of these grand proposals that never came to pass. And, the people that make the renderings, the architectural and design firms, they do great. they're doing great in this town. But the people that want to see a really vibrant riverfront, maybe not so much. So what about Atkins' comment, though, that, it's time to get off the stick here and make something happen?
Right. I think his quote was something to the extent of, if I have to hear about the potential for one more year, my head's going to explode. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of talk, potential. But it's costing a lot of money, too. And that's the issue is, you want to get moving, but there's not an unlimited amount of taxpayer dollars for this type of grand venture and ambitious undertakings. But having said that, yes, I think there's fatigue out there among the public, which is, we see the renderings. Tell us when there's actually going to be something there that we can go take advantage of and enjoy. And also, what's it going to cost and what's the return on investment for that? Steve Atkins' proposal, you mentioned the underground parking garages. It's something that he says has been done elsewhere, particularly in Europe. It's starting to become done some in the U.S. And the idea is that when there's a huge flood, you have these underground vaults that would capture the water. So it's almost like the equivalent of like a you know, a drainage pond you might see in a subdivision to capture rainwater and let it drain off so that it doesn't overwhelm buildings. And then if there's a really, really massive storm event like we had with Hurricane Irma, the idea would be the parking garage itself would also mm-hmm. become the place where the water could go.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. You know, I don't know. So part of me is like, okay, I get it. The water's got to go somewhere. It's better to go into a storage area and wait till the flood recedes, and then you pump it out and you mitigate the damage that might otherwise be done. Part of me is like, we're talking about a big river. I kind of envision these kids at the beach building these ditches and stop the ocean tide from coming up, and the ocean tide rolls right over it. I mean, it captures some of the water, but not all of the water. So I think there's probably a lot of questions about how it would work, what the engineering would be, what the cost is, and what the benefits would be if you do have one of those big storms. How much of a difference would it really make?
If you're just tuning in, as we speak with the Times Union's David Bauerlein, later this morning, the Jaguars will unveil ambitious new plans for the North Bank in downtown Jacksonville. At the same time, developer Steve Atkins has unveiled a plan for another portion of the riverfront. We've spent decades in this city talking about what to do to make downtown a world-class destination. Will it ever happen? Or are we doomed to just see rendering after rendering in this city? Let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Dennis in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning. I'm just curious. We've talked in the past about having a world-class aquarium down on the waterfront, tied in with the zoo. And in the last couple of years, that's gone silent. I'm just wondering if there's any thought about that coming back.
Right.
I think that would be a great addition to the waterfront.
Yeah, thank you, Dennis. Another group, David, came out with this rendering, getting back to the renderings, this gorgeous aquarium that they wanted to build on the waterfront. And I believe there was even talk of setting up water transport between the Jacksonville Zoo and the aquarium downtown. And, there have been so many proposals, it's hard to keep track. But certainly there are those that advocate for either an aquarium or some other kind of focal point attraction like that.
Yes, absolutely. So I will say that, so far as I know, that's not something that's really on the table at this point in terms of that. Now, the plan that you mentioned before for Mosh to move from its South Bank location to a location on the North Bank near the sports complex, even though it would not have a, quote, aquarium, I mean, they're talking about a lot of exhibits and exhibitions and, you know, kind of immersing people in river life. And there could be something, it would be similar to that idea mm-hmm. where you go there and you really experience up close and personal, you know, marine life, marine activity, even if it would not be, say, the aquarium that you kind of think of when you think of what some other cities have done, where it's that is the be-all and end-all of the attraction. So, but we'll see what Mosh has to do. It sounds like they have a lot of opportunities if they were there right by the river to really pull together some eye-catching exhibits that would be similar to what people talk about with the aquarium.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will be interviewing the Mosh CEO on this program pretty soon here as well about that. Anne at the beaches. Hi, Anne. How are you?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes. My comment is I think it would be sad to see the river fenced in by high-rise buildings and not have some sort of parkland where you can actually see the river as you in many cities. I mean, just a pretty parkland by the river. So I realize this isn't a good investment maybe, but at least...
But it is a good investment.
There.
Yeah.
It is. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Anne. You know, the organization Riverfront Parks Now, which is a coalition of groups, are arguing just that, Anne, that it is a good investment to have green space and park space on the waterfront, that is economic development. David, can you speak to that?
Yes, and they've been pretty persuasive in showing how, even though the park itself is not a generator of taxes and jobs, the amenity itself fuels other investment because people want to be close to that. It's it adds to why you'd want to live downtown versus anywhere else. So I will say that the plans that have been put forward so far along the North Bank Riverfront, including the one that Steve Atkins put out, they all have strips, broad strips of public space where the riverwalk would be. And it's not just a strip of concrete. It's got, you know, vegetation, green space along both sides, as well as in the case of his plan where the landing is, a pretty big part of that parcel would be park. Certainly when you get down towards the shipyards, there's been a lot of talk about having some big destination-type parks that are really nice to look at. And also there still would be the shipyards with that public access along the actual waterfront. So it's not what Riverfront now wants, which is really big parcels of parkland. But it's not going to be a case either where it's you know, you have to own a condominium in order to be a walk in front of the riverfront in that section.
Yeah,
it's
going
to be a mix of both, hybrid.
Nancy writes on our Facebook page, cities have successfully invested in major parks and public spaces on their riverfront as a key element in downtown vitalization. We should do the same and also address resiliency. Thank you for that. Lots of calls. Alan in Jacksonville. Hi, Alan. Go ahead. Hey, Alan, you're on the air. All right, Alan, give us a call back. Mark on the west side. Hello, Mark. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I was just wondering, is this the proposal where Shotcon springs the $800 million price tag for a new stadium, or is this something different?
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that, David. The Jaguars, you know, did try to make Lot J happen, another development that would have required a lot of city investment, a lot of our taxpayer money. That went down to defeat. The taxpayers basically revolted on that. Here's a comment on Facebook from Perry. Whatever happens, the developers should pay for this themselves until the promises of consolidation are kept. Whether it's Khan's vision for the riverfront or a new stadium or another private developer, city incentives are going to be part of this mix in one way or another, and that's not really popular with the voters.
No. First of all, any downtown development in Jacksonville and anywhere else at this stage in the U.S. generally has public incentives, taxpayer incentives. And you're right, they are often not popular with the public because they may see there's needs in their neck of the woods, and then they don't go downtown, and why should their tax dollars go to downtown? And so that's going to be a challenge as well this time around. It always is. There's always a lot of debate among city council members. And, you know, the weird thing on the Lot J was it actually, the vote was actually 12-7 for it, but they needed a supermajority, which was 13 votes for it to pass. So it was kind of one of those weird, they approved it but rejected it type of things. But there would be, I'm sure there's going to be a large amount of debate about whatever the incentives would be and whatever the city's share of it would be. You know, people want the Riverwalk generally. They like the idea of extending it. Well, that costs taxpayer dollars. Then you get into the question of to what extent should there be incentives for private investment itself to make it successful, and that's a harder sell.
Tweets coming into the show. Here's one from a listener. Just look at the Bean in Chicago for a model of how to bring people downtown and balance water views and public access. This isn't rocket science. Right now, it's a power and a money game. There's a new Twitter handle, by the way, that has just launched, David. It's First Downtown Jax, getting to the vision of, I think it's the Atkins Group. And I'm looking at this as we talk. Yes, First Downtown on Twitter, a platform to capture the Jaguars' commitment to development and to our city. That's the Jaguars' vision. And they've sent a tweet out saying, join us at 10:30 a.m. on Facebook or at jaguars.com for a kickoff you don't want to miss. Saying that they want to rewrite the playbook for downtown using sports analogies around this initiative. Let's take one more call. It's Linda in Mandarin. Linda, good morning.
Good morning. I am someone who, I just did a river green or whatever, a river boat tour last weekend, where they were asking for our input on how we would envision the land. And I am not against incentives. My understanding, Mr. Kahn has done some incentives in other cities where he just got incentives, but he wasn't subsidized totally. I am for private industry bringing their capital to us and letting us as taxpayer subsidize the vision, but not fund their development. I don't think that's a proper thing, like last time where we were going to borrow the money. Mr. Atkins wants half the billion. I'm sure Mr. Kahn is going to want another $300-400 million. And I would just like our rich developers to show us what funding they're going to bring to the table first before they make us go out and borrow the money at soon. Probably the interest rates might be going up, and we're going to be saddled with that for a gazillion years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against development. I think most people aren't. But we want private industry, who they like to tell us that they can grow the capital. Plus, I don't want my football team developing the whole downtown. You stay in your lane. You're going to get the bed tax for the football stadium in addition to whatever we give you for the development. I don't think the relationship has been balanced so far, and we need our city council and mayors to be advocates for the citizens, not for the developers. Thanks, guys.
Okay, Linda, thank you. What about Linda's point of view, David?
Yeah, and that's where all those questions she brought up are exactly what the city council and the mayor's office would want to look at in terms of any economic development deal. What is the private sector going to bring to the table? How much are they actually skin in the game do they have? To the extent the city puts up money, what is it getting in return from that in terms of additional property tax revenue, sales tax revenue that would come from the economic activity that would come from that particular development? It's all the just simple return on investment math, and that'll be part of any kind of calculation that goes into it. The idea has always been kind of if there's public space, it's open to the public, then yeah, the city would have a role in developing that. And then if there's economic incentives for the business itself, what does the city get out of that?
Yeah.
If there's nothing there at all, they get nothing. To the extent that there's something there at all and you have some benefits, what are they? You know, it gets all dicey when people start to talk about, you know, intangible benefits and things that can't quite be quantified. And then it's like, well, okay, that's almost like, then it becomes very difficult to actually do a real hard assessment of what is the taxpayers actually getting out of it.
Before we let you go, David, one more note about downtown. The building you spent decades working in, the former Florida Times Union building, may soon go, and a retail office, restaurant, and apartment project could be developed on that site. Will the TU building be demolished, and will we see all new construction? What can you tell us?
Well, surely the building will be demolished. There's no, I don't think there's any way to restore and renovate that. Not to cut you off.
That's sad to me. That's an interesting building and a beautiful building in many ways. Certainly the adaptive reuse folks in this community have spoken out against demolishing all of these older buildings. But go ahead.
Yeah, and to be honest, Melissa, we have not yet seen renderings from this particular development group. The previous renderings that were put out prior to this, they were basically demolish it, start fresh, start new, and put new buildings there. And I would be surprised, quite frankly, if there was an attempt to reuse that building just for the age. And it may not be very easy to adapt it. But there's going to be a lot of reconstruction on that site because you'd want to daylight where the creek runs under the parking deck.
Mm-hmm.
So they may just decide to start afresh. But I don't, that project is still really, really early in the process. And it is one of those things where we hear a lot about things happening and then they don't happen. So it's still pretty exploratory in terms of that particular site and what might happen with it next.
We'll follow it, and always good to have your insights. He's David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Melissa.
And much more still ahead later in the hour. What's new this summer at Caddyshack Ranch? But up next.
Wear Orange is dedicated to honoring the lives of people affected by gun violence.
Local members of Moms Demand mobilize for gun safety this weekend. We'll be right back. Well, this weekend, advocates of reducing gun violence in America will take part in a campaign called Wear Orange Weekend. This is happening coast to coast, including in our area. I spoke with Katie Hathaway and Crystal Turner, both with local chapters of Moms Demand Action. Take a listen. Katie, Crystal, good to talk to you both. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
So tell us a little bit about Wear Orange Weekend coming up June 4th through the 6th. This is a national initiative sponsored by Moms Demand Action and Every Town for Gun Safety. What's going to be happening in our area? Katie, let's start with you.
So the first Friday in June is National Gun Violence Awareness Day, and it's the beginning of Wear Orange Weekend. Wear Orange is dedicated to honoring the lives of people affected by gun violence, and it's a time when we amplify the voice of those demanding an end to gun violence. Our volunteers here in Jacksonville will be honoring Wear Orange Weekend with action by supporting an awesome community partner sponsored by Grace.
And we'll talk more about Sponsored by Grace in a minute. Crystal, you know, this is a problem all over America, but Jacksonville, I think, has an even more deadly connection to the gun violence epidemic in the United States. We have been the homicide capital of Florida off and on for over 20 years. And so if you could talk a little bit about what this means locally for people that are involved in this movement.
Unfortunately, Melissa, what it means locally for people who are involved in this movement here in Jacksonville is the continued awareness that simply means that every life here in Jacksonville and surrounding areas that we've all been impacted by gun violence, whether that is directly, whether it's someone in your family or someone you know, you work with, or just come in contact with. The indirect impact that it has on our community is that it does change our community. We are all hoping and praying to be able to continue to raise our families in communities where gun safety is a priority for all of us. So we're all affected either directly or indirectly by gun violence.
Right. And so it's interesting, Katie, to talk about the Wear Orange movement, the Wear Orange campaign. That color was chosen in part because orange is the color that hunters wear in the woods to protect themselves and others. So there's symbolism behind the color that you're using, correct?
Yes, that is right. Wear Orange originated back in 2015, which would have been Hydea Pendleton's 18th birthday. So it began with a group of teenagers in Chicago who wanted to honor their friend Hydea after she was shot and killed.
Okay. And, you know, Crystal, during the pandemic, we have not really seen any cessation of gun violence in America. In fact, it's increased. Almost every day we hear about another mass shooting in America.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the pandemic in some other areas of our lives, things slowed down. Unfortunately, during the pandemic, there was an increase in gun sales. There was an increase in domestic violence. There was an increase in intentional gun shootings. And there was an increase, unfortunately, in unintentional shootings. And so what that says to me is that this continues to be a bigger problem than most people would unfortunately assume. And the fact that every day during the pandemic, we were still waking up to multiple victims and multiple lives being taken, unfortunately, to gun violence. So it means there is so much more work for us to continue to do.
Some more about this issue. America has a gun suicide problem. Gun suicides make up 2/3 of all firearm deaths in the United States.
Household gun ownership increases the risk of suicide by 3 times. 1,500 kids are killed each year in America from guns. Many are victims of unintentional shootings from unsecured weapons. Another 3 million American kids are directly impacted by gun violence each year. So, Katie, when we talk about the Wear Orange campaign, tell us a little bit about the group that you're trying to spotlight as you go about this awareness effort.
Sure. We are spotlighting sponsored by Grace, and we have organized a donation drive to support their activities. And we've invited their Grounds of Grace mobile coffee bus to share their grounds and fellowship with the community on June 5th. They just celebrated their 3rd birthday this month, and they're doing fantastic work in the 32209 zip code in Jacksonville. They call it the most hopeful zip code in Jacksonville, and their mission is going to be expanding to other neighborhoods in Jacksonville soon. They started just by showing up in this neighborhood. They've helped the community by holding empowerment classes for the youth to help children succeed in school and learn life skills. They show up on the weekends for impact days. They've helped organize community cleanups, and they've created memorable experiences outside of the community for the children. Ron and his staff, they saw firsthand that the street was always hiring. So in addition to the work that they've been doing in the community, they are also offering alternative employment through their Grounds of Grace coffee bus. Tyler Vincent left a career at Starbucks to manage this bus and its mission. It employs teens in the neighborhood, and it provides career skills and is opening new horizons for these children.
Okay.
So we are really excited to be working with them this Wear Orange weekend.
And Crystal, you know, the toll of gun violence in America, it's just this constant drumbeat of death, unnecessary death. You became an activist because this touched your family. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Like many people, I had often watched the news and said prayers and visited others during their time of loss. Unfortunately, never knowing that that loss would one day knock on my door. April 1st, 2015, while on a lunch break from a business that was family ran that my daughter owned, I received a phone call at 12 noon exactly with an employee on the other end letting me know that unfortunately my middle daughter, Janaea, age 29, and my youngest son, Donnell, 23, had been shot and killed by my daughter's estranged husband. That day, as many know, changed our lives forever. Changed my lives in ways that I never thought, and one of those was becoming an advocate for gun safety and gun control in my community. The reason that we fight so hard for that as volunteers of Moms Demanding Action is simply to make sure that the generations behind us will not be continued to be affected by the lack of gun safety in a community that they reside in. As I share with people often, and just simply ending and highlighting my story by simply saying this, please don't wait until gun violence knocks on your door to get into the fight. You can fight now every day by reaching out to your elected officials, by showing up and supporting us often at many of the different various events that we hold, such as the Wear Orange event, or you can simply just text READY to 64433. And someone from Moms Demanding Action will connect with you with your local chapter so that you can get involved with us as well.
And to be clear, Moms Demand isn't calling for an end to Second Amendment rights, Katie, or things like that. You're asking for common sense solutions that a majority of Americans want, like increased background checks and closing the gun show loophole. Those are the kinds of issues that we're talking about. So with all of this said, Katie, the Wear Orange campaign is asking everyone who wants to end the scourge of gun violence to just wear orange June 4th through the 6th. And you're having an event during that time frame too, correct?
That is correct. And you are correct with what you said. We advocate for common sense laws to make communities safer. And we will be holding an event with the Grounds of Grace coffee bus on June 5th. Here in Neptune Beach on Saturday, June 5th, in the old Kmart Shopping Center.
Look out for that, and thank you both so much, Crystal Turner, Katie Hathaway, both with Moms Demand Action. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, a new hospital-based project is launching at UF Health Jacks, and it will focus on improving the health and well-being of this area's most vulnerable patients. It'll be based out of their Total Care Clinic. The head of that clinic is on the line, Dr. Ross Jones. Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones, good morning to you. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Anne Marie Knight, VP of Community Engagement at UF Health Jacks. Hey, Anne Marie.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you both. So, Dr. Jones, let's begin with you. You have already a total care clinic at UF Health Jacksonville. This is a new piece of what you're already doing. Not just healthcare services, but more stuff. What's happening?
Sure. So what we're doing is we're launching what we call our Urban Health Alliance. This is based on the fact that I think in most healthcare systems, we're realizing that we need to focus beyond just treating the disease. We need to treat the person as a whole person, and then also realize that if we're really going to be effective in our treatment plans, we really need to make sure that we understand the patient's needs outside of our hospital and clinic walls. So we've been really focused on how do we make sure that the patients have access to healthy foods, how can we also make sure any of their unmet social needs are being met in the community, and how can we connect them as UF Health to our partner agencies.
This is a really holistic way of looking at health. Anne Marie, the inequality of health outcomes in our area is something I know you're focused on. Of the 10 largest Florida counties by population, Duval County is at the bottom. We don't have a healthy population, so how will this new project work to address that, and where are the biggest disparities?
Right, so I'm glad you said that. So our community as a whole has a big problem, but if you start slicing and dicing us, the problem moves. So the most vulnerable populations are the, just like your last caller, your last presenter, 322-09, 06, everywhere on the north side of our community, there's a significant health disparity. As simple as looking at the difference in life expectancy right here on our campus at 322-09 of being 67 years old and crossing over to San Marco and you're here, life expectancy 78 years old. Mm. So quite a bit of disparity amongst our community.
Sure. And so UF Health is really the epicenter, I think, in the healthcare world of this city in working on these issues. Dr. Jones, people for years have thought of UF Health, the former Shands, as the city's safety net hospital, but you're so much more than that. And how do you see this effort as being part of your overall mission?
Right. So as one of the largest academic medical systems in the region, we really, our goal is really to push things forward. I think what we're really doing is showing how you take clinical service and really integrate that into our social services needs that our patients need, and really pushing other systems to recognize their patients have unmet needs and helping and showing how you can collaborate with the community to really meet those needs.
We're talking with Dr. Ross Jones, head of the Total Care Clinic at UF Health Jacksonville, and Anne Marie Knight, VP of Community Engagement at UF Health Jacks, about their new urban health initiative. So, Anne Marie, food, counseling, and healthcare all in one place, right? How is this launching? Is this already up and running? And how are people going to be able to access it?
Sure. So our ribbon cutting is actually tomorrow, and we have been working through our system to identify the patients. It is a unique day that in our electronic medical records, we now have the ability to look at a patient and ask them very specific questions around their social needs. Think about any appointment you've been to in the past where the doctor says, Melissa, Anne-Marie, you need to do X. We walk away, we know our personal challenges and why we can't do them. This is even worse for this population, right? The physical challenges, the community challenges of executing. So tomorrow, we will open two new spaces. One we are identified as calling the Social Services Hub, and it is exactly as it sounds. A patient who meets with Dr. Jones and his colleagues will have the opportunity to find out where they can go to get their social services needs met. This is not novel. The services we're going to be connecting them to already exist. And I want to emphasize that. There's lots of good work in our community. They already exist. We're just going to be the quarterback, so to speak, to make sure that there's a very intimate handoff, to make sure the follow-up is done with the patient to help them succeed in whatever challenge they're trying to meet. The second piece of that is our food pharmacy. So if a patient has hypertension, diabetes, or other chronic disease that would benefit from nutrition, we are going to invite them to enroll in our food pharmacy. Nutrition-based prescription, where this patient then every 2 weeks can come and get groceries from us. Because we know, all of us on this call today know, that we have pockets of food insecurity in our community. Mm-hmm. So with the food deserts, we can't look at a patient and say, fix the way you eat because you're diabetic. We need to find solutions to help them address it. And we have great colleagues in the community that are partnering with us on this journey.
And I would think, too, in the pandemic, these needs have become more acute than ever. Can you speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the beginning of the pandemic, we were out there doing COVID testing in the community and talking to our neighbors. And now we're out in the community doing vaccine hesitancy education, and everybody is yearning and looking for solutions. There are great solutions, again, that are being offered countywide. We just need a system of collaboration and pulling these together and really wrapping our arms around the most vulnerable members of our community.
So, Dr. Jones, with all of that said, a big day for you this week coming up with the ribbon cutting and beyond.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. I think this will be a game changer, especially for our patients, really making sure that we're taking care of all of their needs. We're really providing, like we said in our clinic name, total care, making sure that they have, you know, not only are we treating their diabetes and hypertension, but also making sure that we understand them as a people and the challenges that they have outside the clinic walls, and making sure that we're giving them the support that we can offer as the University of Florida Health System.
I want to thank you both and have fun with it at the ceremony, and then the real work begins. Dr. Ross
Absolutely.
Jones, head of the Total Care Clinic at UF Health Jacksonville, and Marie Knight, Vice President of Community Engagement at UF Health Jax. Thank you both. Thanks so much. And for all you do. A quick break. And in a moment, are you ready to get out with your family, try something new, do a fun outing? As things open back up again, here's an option. In a moment, we'll tell you what's new this summer at a unique attraction in the city, Caddy Shack Ranch. That's coming up. We'll be right back.
Radio around the clock. Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
Nonprofit Center presents Resilient 2021, a virtual summit about the future of the nonprofit workforce on June 17th. This summit is made possible by Community First Credit Union. Learn more at nonprofitctr.org.
Webster University, offering Master of Arts in Counseling and graduate business programs, including the MBA, Cybersecurity, and Master of Health Administration. Enrolling now for fall term. More info at webster.edu/Jacksonville or 268-3037.
A drink after work now and then might be more than a comforting habit. It could be evolution at work. Edward Slingerland is Distinguished University Scholar at the University of British Columbia, and he joins us to discuss why many organisms, human and otherwise, like to tie one on now and again, and the effect that has on our societies. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Federal prosecutors in Brooklyn investigating whether Russians meddled in the 2020 election are targeting Andriy Derkach. He's an alleged Russian operative and seven-term member of the Ukrainian parliament. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Simon Schuster, who profiles Derkach and writes about his work with Rudy Giuliani in Time magazine. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Reverend Paula Stone Williams led a conservative evangelical church for more than 20 years. Then she came out as a transgender woman. Now she fights for gender equity and LGBTQ rights. Her new memoir explores the hard lessons learned from first being seen as a man and then as a woman. We talk about Paula's life as a woman next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Caddyshack Ranch is open for the summer with a rare chance to see those prized big cats up close. It's a different experience than what you'll see at the zoo. I spoke with Caddyshack Ranch owner Kurt Lejudis, and he told me everything that's happening this month. Take a listen.
Hey, Kurt. Good to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
So tell us what's going on this summer at Caddyshack Ranch.
Boy, you know, even with everything going on in the world, we've been blessed, I can say, and we have been busy. Things are going on here at the ranch, and of course, not open as much as we thought we would be. We're open right now every day from 1 to 3. And from 1 to 3, it's only 12 for adults, 5 for kids. 3 o'clock is the last admittance. But it gives you an opportunity to see all the animals. All the animals are out. They're all visible. Of course, just like cats, a lot are sleeping during the day. But activity is more at the night. Nighttime used to be one of our biggest fundraisers where we did a nighttime event. We've cut back because of COVID, and unfortunately are still at limited numbers, even though a lot of the restrictions have been lifted. We felt that it was important for not only the animals but our visitors to enjoy their time here.
It's been so hard for so many businesses for the last year or so. You did get a lot of support from the public to keep the Caddyshack Ranch open, didn't you? I mean, it's sort of a unique attraction for this area.
And, you know, and that's what's been wonderful is that we still have a good flow of folks during the day from 1 to 3 on a regular basis. And I can say, just like you're saying, is unfortunate because of what's going on. A lot of businesses have lost their revenue and unfortunately closed. We're growing. We're in the middle of a huge expansion, a renovation that's going to benefit the animals, the folks that help the animals, and the folks that come to visit the animals. And, of course, we're looking for sponsorship because we have a lot of things going on. New cabins for the animals, new swimming pools for the animals, new habitats, a new educational facility. But all these things happen because people come out to enjoy. We've never had any city, state, or any type of federal funding, no grants from any of those. We've been doing this as a commitment to the animals to make sure it happened. A slow process, but it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, and so as summer is now upon us, this is a good activity for parents to get out and do with their kids now that they're out of school. You have a lot planned for June to get people out to the ranch and also raise money for your expansion. Can you tell us what's on the calendar?
Sure, you know, June is kind of like the kickoff for the summertime stuff happening. So we're looking at a huge fundraiser, of course, like I was saying, you know, for the new habitats and stuff. But Sunday, June 6th, we're going to have an enrichment tour. That's a Sunday around 2 o'clock. What we'll be doing is actually be giving treats to some of the animals here at the sanctuary. And we've done this in the past, but we're going to start up again once a month. I hope folks are following us on our social media, Facebook and Instagram, because we'll be advertising it and letting folks know that it's a great opportunity to see some activity from the animals. And, of course, Father's Day, you know, the 19th, those things all a great opportunity to come on out, see the animals, and enjoy a family day.
Yeah, so let's keep in mind, this Sunday, it'll be the first time since the pandemic began that you will be hosting an enrichment tour. So
right.
This Sunday would be a great time for folks to come check things out.
That's correct. An opportunity to see some movement and some fun animals to enjoy.
And you really love these big cats, don't you? I mean, this is a labor of love for you.
It is. I love it, and I tell people I come back to work every day because I love what I do.
And for people who've never been to the Caddy Shack Ranch, I mean, maybe you've been to the zoo. You've seen some animals there, but your place, Kurt, is different. It's a unique spot in this region. For people that have never visited, I think they'll be really blown away.
Up close and personal, you know, in a safe environment, of course, and opportunity to see animals up close, probably closer than you've ever been before, but an opportunity maybe as a educational learning by accident, some fun facts about the animals.
Check it out, everyone, online at Caddy Shack Ranch. Kurt LaJudas runs that ranch. It's on the north side of town, and they are open for the summer. Kurt, have fun, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today, along with our great team here, producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. We always appreciate your feedback. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Catch our podcast up later today, wherever you like to listen. You can always listen as well through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.